Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Ad conditionem certam perveni, viris mias, in gravescente etate, non iam aptas esset monospitrinum eque administrandum.
Let's stay united. We love Benedict XVI. Jesus is in charge of the church. It's his church, and he's going to guide us through whatever happens.
The question that we need to fundamentally ask when we go to the scriptures is, where is this forgiving my sins? Where are the promises of God? How does this text set me to stand before the face of God?
I like to think of the blind beggar as the first Lutheran. He recognizes that he has nothing, nothing to offer Jesus. All he can do is receive from Jesus.
Injury do players in Iowa, love issues, etc.
Well, we're being told that if we don't participate in these things, we are abandoning the public square. If we don't participate in interfaith prayer services or vigils, then we are not doing our evangelistic duty. We're not carrying out a responsibility as thoroughly as we could. Is that true? Are there good biblical reasons for refraining from interfaith, interreligious prayer services, especially in an American culture where those things happen as often as a natural disaster or a national tragedy occurs? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Albert Mohler joins us to talk about interfaith prayer services for the first few minutes. A little bit later, we'll be beginning a 7-part series on creation today, Jesus and the New Testament on creation. Dr. Joel Heck will be our guest. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse joins us in hour two. We want her thoughts on some statements made about homosexuality in the President's State of the Union address, and then we'll round everything off at the end of the program, talking to Dr. Ken Sherb for a full hour. We'll be talking with him about 16th century reformer Philip Melanchthon, who's remembered on the 16th of February. Dr. Albert Mohler is a regular guest. He's president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, and he's author of numerous books, including Culture Shift and The Conviction to Lead. Dr. Mohler, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Todd, it's always great to be with you. Thank you.
You are a pastor. You're a seminary professor, seminary president in the Southern Baptist Convention at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. I think 16 million of you guys in the United States, somewhere
Something
in that,
like that
largest Protestant denomination, yes. And known for bold evangelistic efforts. Have you ever participated in an interreligious prayer or worship service?
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
Well, I'm assuming when you say interreligious, you mean represented by people who would not affirm the gospel of Christ, or perhaps even would affirm a very different religious worldview and set of convictions. I could not enter into a worship service with them without implying what would, in my view, violate the gospel itself.
What about joint prayer? What about the Muslim prays, the Jew prays, the Baha'i prays? And you could, I guess you could add anything from the panoply, and then you pray. What about that?
Well, I could not do that together as if this is just something like an ecumenical prayerathon, because what that actually would represent is I think, the antithesis of what Elijah did on Mount Carmel in 1 Kings 18, where he said, if God be God, let him be God. If Baal is God, let him be God. He didn't say, let's have a prayer service and then shake hands and leave. He said, let's let the fire fall. And I realized that the etiquette of contemporary postmodern America is that all persons should just stand beside one another and say, we're together in spite of all of our differences. But what that really implies is a relativity of truth that I think is incompatible with the gospel.
We're being told by some, and this happened in the wake of the Newtown, Connecticut tragic shootings. There was a prayer vigil held there in Newtown. One of the ministers of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod attended. It created a bit of a tempest with the media, and we were told
right.
by many inside and outside the church that, these participation in these things is necessary for full, bold evangelism in the United States. What do you make of that?
Well, I think the first thing I would note is that virtually none of these things ever have anything to do with evangelism, even in terms of what the framers and sponsors of the event would have to say they are all about. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think the moment you say, I'm there for evangelism, you'll be effectively disinvited from the event. And I think that's one indication of the problem. But the other is, you know, does the Christian believe that, especially the Christian minister, a minister of the word, believe that the gospel is best projected in kind of a multiple-choice question in which the etiquette of the situation does not allow you even to be pointed about the particularities of the faith?
You're saying there essentially the forum itself, the etiquette of the situation is the term I think you used there, pretty much requires that all claimants make equal claims to their deities, to their methods of salvation, etc.
Well, you know, implicit in those kinds of ecumenical gatherings is actually a theological minimalism in which virtually nothing of any effect is said other than I say these platitudinous things in the name of the deity that I invoke. And so I just think it's problematic from beginning to end. And by the way, I do not minimize the pressures on any pastor to participate in these things. Pressures even from his own people and peers who would think that this is more demanded by etiquette than anything else.
So you mentioned a moment ago Elijah and the prophet of Baal. I want you to go, or the prophets of Baal, I want you to go into a little more detail because it's often argued that Elijah was there among pagan prophets. Everybody got to pray. And that's how the story is usually told. You said, no, Elijah says, let the fire fall. How does the story really go there in 1 Kings 18?
Well, the story really begins and ends in a way that's not very convenient to someone who wants to hold an ecumenical service. It begins with Elijah calling the people of Israel together and asking, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? In other words, he doesn't say it's okay to take this multiple choice issue. He says, if God is God, let him be God. If Baal is Baal, then follow him. And that's how he sets up the situation. And then he suggests that the priests of Baal pray, and he says, I will pray, and the God who sends the fire, he will be God. And when Baal does not send the fire, because, of course, he's non-existent, Elijah starts to make fun of him. I mean, using humor that would be shocking to many Christians who think they know the Bible. And then at the end, it does not end with people saying, I'll meet you again next time. It ends with God's judgment upon the prophets of Baal and the priests. And so, you know, there is just no way you can read 1 Kings 18 and find any justification for any kind of mixture of ecumenical interests here.
Do we have any biblical examples where, moving to the New Testament, where Jesus or his disciples or Paul or any of the apostles not preached, not taught, but worshipped or prayed with pagans?
Well, absolutely not. There's nothing like that. As a matter of fact, the only event in the New Testament which involves even the kind of give and take you might think about here is Paul in Acts chapter 17. But you'll recall that one of the things Paul did very clearly when he spoke, and he wasn't speaking amongst other, priests and prophets, he spoke directly to them and corrected their thinking and presented the gospel and said, you ought not to think, correcting their thinking. And again, in the etiquette of these interfaith services, I promise you that is not a part of what takes place.
So just for the sake of argument, Dr. Moeller, because you've already made it clear that it wouldn't come to this, but if for some reason you were to wake up and find yourself on the dais with the microphone in your face,
yes,
at one of these interfaith serial prayer services, and you had to say something, what would you have to say?
Well, I have to push back just a little bit, Todd, and say that I think one of my responsibilities is to make certain that that does not happen. So you're asking a hypothetical that I would stake my reputation on seeking to avoid. But let's assume I fell out of a helicopter, and there I am. It's ludicrous, but yes, I'll have to answer the question, and that is, I would have to declare the gospel, and yet the very fact that I find that a very difficult question to answer is why it's almost impossible to actually preach the gospel in that kind of situation.
Sticking with the hypothetical, and I agree it is ludicrous, but this kind of justifications often make for ludicrous hypotheticals. Would you have to say, and this is, you know, purely from my own thoughts here, would you have to, in some form, say, you know, dear friends of the community, Allah can't help you. Whatever God the Jews are worshiping, He can't help you. The God that the Baha'i call upon, He cannot help you. Would you have to separate those false gods from the true God?
Well, at the very least, what I would have to say is that there is only one true God, and only He can help. And that is the one true God who created the heavens and the earth, and who sent His only Son, Jesus Christ, as the Redeemer of sinners and the only Savior. And so, you know, I really don't want to prognosticate what I might say, because I can't imagine being in that situation, and I actually think it's a prior responsibility to make sure that I would not be.
How would you respond to someone who says, look, the position you have taken here may have been fine 100 years ago, but it just backward fundamentalism?
Well, worse things have been said, but I understand the spirit in which that's said, because that just reflects the fact that so many in the church today think that theology has to bend to etiquette, and that etiquette being the etiquette of a postmodern world that says we take all truth claims and act as if they do not matter, at least for a period of time when we gather together in a moment of urgency. And, you know, frankly, that's a very good argument if you're running a pail of water, you know, trying to put out a house. At that point, we really don't worry right now if I'm getting that water bucket from a Baha'i priest or a Mormon bishop or whatever. But that's not a worship service, and it's not about prayer. Once you enter into it, something that is formally about prayer and worship, then that's a completely different thing. Then that line is no longer the line of urgency to put out a fire, in which, you know, quite frankly, if an automobile accident happens, we don't do a confessional check about the ambulance drivers. But when it comes to participating in a service, a worship service, there's the problem.
How would you counsel others who share your thoughts here? I'm among them, who find themselves on the real pointy end of both the culture and the church's stick here, being told, being bashed in the media for refusing to participate. How would you counsel them with about a minute?
Well, I would simply say that what we need to do is to let people know we'll be praying, and that we'll be holding a prayer service to which we would invite the entire community. But we can't participate in a prayer service of an ecumenical nature that would imply that the gospel is just one message among others, Christ just one deity among others, and the danger of that confusion is greater than the temporary scandal of not appearing where our peers and neighbors think we should be.
Finally then, Dr. Moeller, how would you respond to someone who says to not participate in these things, especially at the time of national crisis, is a Christian abandoning the public square?
Well, the public square can never be reduced to a service or an event like that. The public square is the ongoing public conversation in which I hope every Christian pastor, and especially confessional pastor, is a part. But we cannot allow ourselves to be forced into participation in things that would violate the gospel and our gospel conscience, because we're told the public square demands it. There are many forums I decline. There are many speaking opportunities I do not accept, that frankly don't even have anything to do with an ecumenical complication, but are just not fitting places for the gospel or for a gospel minister to appear. The public square includes everything from pornography to the modern media to the digital world and all the rest. And we need discernment about where in the world the gospel minister should and should not show up.
Dr. Albert Moeller is a regular guest. He's president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, author of numerous books, including Culture Shift and The Conviction to Lead. You will find a link to his website at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Moeller, it's always a pleasure, and thank you for your time.
Todd, great to be with you as always.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Joel Heck. We're going to kick off a series, a 7-part series, on creation today. Let's go straight to the man, to Jesus and the New Testament. What does Jesus and the New Testament tell us about biblical creation? Dr. Joel Heck, right after this.
Hey, Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is a daily devotional resource for Lent titled Restore the Roar. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Reed Lessing. You can read an excerpt of Restore the Roar at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase this Lenten devotional by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Restore the Roar costs only $2.29 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040.